very happy to have with us Tom Withers. He's a regular on our roundtable discussions, the panel with Jim Donovan and Doug Deacon. Tom Withers from the Associated Press. And Tom, just wanted to get caught up on a lot that's been happening in the off season with us. First, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Vic. Good to see you again.
And it's great to see you. And it has been a while since we've gathered here to talk a little bit about the Browns and about football in general. But some important moves, the biggest being the hiring of Brad Childress as offensive coordinator, a much anticipated move. And I guess because his name was bandied about and mentioned, and really the only one kind of speculated upon, I guess Mike Sherman was too, in the media, I guess it doesn't come as a huge surprise that it ended up being him.
No, you're right. And then first of all, too, Vic, nobody ever stops talking about the Browns in this town, do they? Whether it's
not at all
during the season or the offseason. So, yeah, I mean, Childress was a name that, you know, came up, I guess, in that first news conference with Pat Shermer once the season ended. And sure enough, you know, he ended up being the guy. So I think it's a good hire from a lot of standpoints. First of all, another head coach in the building for Pat to kind of bounce things off
right,
of.
Right.
And then obviously somebody that he's got a strong working relationship with. We'll see going forward. I know, you know, one of the big topics once Childress was hired was, okay, now who's going to call the plays?
Yeah.
And I think early on, from what I understand, you know, Pat will continue to call the plays, but I can see that transition, you know, potentially happening, you know, maybe very soon with that. So I don't think it's a real big deal. And I think it's a real nice hire.
Yeah, and there's significance to who is actually calling the plays, the rhythm and timing that goes with that, in addition to the choices. But as much as anything else, there's a flow to play calling. And those who have done it very, very well in this league, you know, have that feel. It's not even something they think about.
Right.
Pat Shermer, this is, as a offensive coordinator in his past, I mean, this is something that is going to be and come naturally to him. But with Brad Childress, you know, it wasn't something as a role that he had in Philadelphia, even though he was there with Andy Reid,
right,
who did handle that. But he was part of that staff when he worked there with Pat Shermer, when Pat was the quarterback's coach and Brad was the offensive coordinator. And I think Pat previously was coaching other spots with Childress there as well. But you're right. I don't know that it has to be something from the first day or the first day of the season that Childress has to do. But I do think it's imperative, and I'm going to believe and assume they're going to get there, that they're of one mind about what is called.
I think we, and I say we as fans and media, sometimes get caught up in this minutia and starting to worry about, you know, personalities and relationships and how jobs are, titled and who's going to handle what responsibility. They're going to work this out. I mean, these guys have been coaches for a long time. You know, I think we also forget too that, you know, just because a game plan is made up or plays are called on the sideline, things change all the time.
Sure.
These guys want input from each other, just like you and I do with our coworkers.
No, that's a great point. And they will be, of all the members of this coaching staff, I mean, they're going to be the two that are tied together
Absolutely. The
closest, because that is Pat's background. And certainly you mentioned about Brad's background as a head coach and how valuable it is for Pat Shermer, who now has 1 year under his belt as a head coach, certainly knows, learned a lot of the pitfalls that go with that job,
right,
the challenges that go with that job. He's got sounding boards now. He's had Dick Geron here, who's been a head coach, and that's obviously hugely valuable. Ray Rhodes has been a head coach, again, on this staff, not to mention, of course, Mike Holmgren down the hall and all his vast experience. So there's a lot of sounding boards, and I think adding to that list with Brad Childress is a great thing, is an excellent thing. And Brad, for his part in Minnesota, had his challenges and struggles, and now he's seeing, so he saw it from that side of the fence. Seeing it from this side, I think he appreciates that the younger, newer guy at this position, there's a way for him to, I'm not going to say mentor him, but certainly someone that he can advise.
Oh, there's no question.
You know, maybe a big brotherly
way. Yeah, there is nothing like on-the-job training, particularly in this league, Vic. I mean, I was interested last week. Romeo Crennel was on with a couple interviews, former Browns coach, and talking about, you know, what he would do differently or what he's going to do differently now in Kansas City based on the lessons that he learned in Cleveland. So
right.
I think we can all relate to that out here. I mean, we all would go back and do things differently. And we would like to have people around us as we're learning to kind of help us through. So I think that's exactly the role that Childress can play with Pat. And I think Pat would be the first to admit that there were mistakes last year, that he can, you know, that he hopes to, you know, gain and learn from some of the things that went wrong. Not everything went wrong. He did a lot of things right as well. You know, you, Jimmy, Doug, and I talked at length about some of the things that Pat did very well last year, and you know, keeping things in house and having the right disposition after a tough loss.
Right.
So yeah, I think going forward, Childress is a big plus for this franchise.
Tom Withers from the Associated Press joining us here on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. The other thing is the philosophy of this offense, and a lot of questions were brought up. You heard them, I heard them, about whether it's aggressive enough, whether the Browns attacked enough and were much like, I guess, the two teams we just saw play in the Super Bowl in terms of their passing game. And usually the complaint was not enough of that was going on. Now, my thinking is, Does a new offensive coordinator necessarily change this? And my answer to that is the scheme itself is not what we saw, is pretty much what we're going to continue to see in structure, form and structure, because that's what they ran together in Philadelphia. That's what they both understand thoroughly. However, I'm wondering if the difference will be with personnel changes,
right?
If you do have some receivers aboard that can allow you to do different things, and maybe to even step it back from that, if you have a running game that allows you to open up and therefore cause defenses to pull in a little more, to respect it more, which the Browns really didn't have on a consistent enough basis last year, that allows you to be a little more aggressive attacking downfield.
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously, Vic, you know, whatever's going to transpire between now and when we get going in July or August, you know, free agency, draft, new signings, whatever the case may be, there's going to be a major change, we would think, in personnel and the offensive side of this for this team. So, yeah, I don't think the scheme is going to change very much. You know, I think it's been interesting over the last couple of weeks hearing fans talk about maybe a talent discrepancy between the Browns and other teams that made the playoffs. I don't necessarily see that. Hmm. You know, I saw a team this past year that obviously had some very major injuries that changed the way they had to game plan on a week-to-week basis. We saw young players maybe thrown into the deep end of the pool before they were ready, who had to learn on the fly, Greg Little being, you know, Exhibit A. So, yeah, I think this offense will basically stay the same. I think we will see, as you said, when we saw the running game clicking, this was a very different football team.
Yeah.
It just changed everything. It changed play calling. It changed, you know, just schemes, everything about it. So, yeah, I think going forward, you know, you're essentially going to see the same offense, but just some new parts.
I would think so. And the fresher perspective, if you will, from another pair of eyes, which is what Brad Childress can bring here.
No doubt.
He'll see some things, even though for Pat Shurmur this past year, it's still fairly new. I mean, that he came aboard with Colt McCoy and the other personnel that he got to know as the year went on. Again, absent, there was no
off-season
to deal with that. That Childress's presence as a fresher pair of eyes, he may see and point out some things in players' abilities that I think will be maybe eye-opening to Pat Shurmur.
There's no question about it. You know, I just, from my own standpoint, I know when there's another set of eyes as an editor that looks at my story that can pull some things out and say, hey, why don't you try this? Or, hey, you know, that paragraph looks pretty good, but if you moved it down here, the story might flow a little better.
Yeah.
So just to use that as an example, but I think that's a great point, Vic. I think Childress coming in, you know, he may see some things in Evan Moore and Peyton Hillis or, you know, whoever's here that, you know, Pat Shurmur never dreamed about with this offense. So, yeah, that can't hurt either.
You were giving me the sweats when you're bringing up editors and going over copy. Oh, my God, bad memories. No, but it's good. That's a great point. And I think, I mean, as an analogy that you made that I think is applicable here. Now, the other hire, the Browns had to replace their secondary coach, and they had Jerome Henderson here who did an outstanding job. Yeah. But now Tim Houck comes in because Jerome moved on to the Dallas Cowboys. And Tim, his background, I don't know if people and secondary coaches don't necessarily get to be as well recognized as other assistant coaches, but he is a guy who's known, if nothing else, as a player who's a real hard hitter.
Yeah.
In the multiple stops that he had, Philadelphia being one of them, and there's some familiarity, of course, with some of the Philadelphia folks on the personnel side here with Tom Heckert and some of the scouts.
Right. I love when there's a hire, Vic, and you look at a guy's resume and you see that he was in the league for 9 or 10 years, and that, you know, a lot, and you know, whether he was a journeyman or not, that shows you that a lot of teams thought there was a lot of value in this guy. And the fact is that he hung around and he found a way to stay in that league for 9 or 10 years. So I think that probably speaks a little bit about his character. I also think when players see that, you know, that's a big respect factor for them. You know, when they see a guy that they know has played, and not only knows who has played, but who has gone through all the rigors of an offseason and had to go through the meetings and knows what it takes to, you know, to be an NFL player. So I think that's a big plus. And I did run into Joe Haden last week at a Cavs game, and I ran that by him, that, you know, sorry to see that Coach Henderson's gone, but now you got a new guy. And Joe, not knowing a lot about Tim, had nice things to say about him. So he was very excited as well.
So he generally, because he felt about Jerome Henderson.
Yeah, I know all those guys hated to see him go. But I think they also, like I said, I think, you know, they look at his resume and they hear about him, and players talk to players. And I think this is a positive as well.
And that's critical. That's really important that a guy like Joe Haden has the buy-in, because you look at that secondary, there's your premier guy, and there's your guy who you would look at in, you know, in year two. Certainly he had the more the better looking rookie
bigger
year
numbers,
because he had more and better numbers. But I think he made strides that that might not have been as visible. And going forward, he's your anchor. He's got to be your shutdown corner.
Totally agree. I think Haden had a very solid year. I mean, he had all those bat downs, and there were some times that maybe, you know, he didn't play as well as he could have. And I think he knows he made some mistakes and got beat in a couple of big balls. But you know, I think by and large, We saw last year, I mean, when you want to extract some of those positives from last season,
right,
I think it was another big year of growth for Joe Haden.
No question. All right, we've got more coming up with Tom Withers from the Associated Press as we continue with Cleveland Browns Daily. It's driven by Liberty Ford, brought to you by Madden NFL 12 in stores now. EA Sports, it's in the game. Back on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford, we are talking with Tom Withers from the Associated Press about this Browns team and this offseason ahead. And, Tom, as we look at what's coming up, you have the Combine as the next big thing on the football calendar. February 22nd, it starts in Indianapolis, and the players, the top prospects will congregate.
It's already started here, by the way.
It did. It probably already did. Mentally, it already started.
The Combine started a couple months ago, didn't it?
If we look at the question, it started in the last month of the season. If we look at the questions that we get for the show that people send to the official Browns Facebook and Twitter pages, it absolutely has. And also to mention that we spent a week of this show, I was at Mobile, Alabama for the Senior Bowl, and that too had a combine-like feel, because the scouts and coaches, or mostly the scouts, but the coaches were there too from all the teams, had a chance to kind of get their first look at players and get opportunities to talk with them. And it was kind of cool to see in the lobby of the main hotel that we were in. It was a catch as catch can. I guess they used, you know, a bunch of texting on their cell phones to get these guys to come down. Hey, I'm here waiting for you. I'm standing by the big flower pot, and that's how they would meet. And then they'd have these discussions, Tom, literally like 4 or 5 feet in front of you, and you could hear, you didn't have to eavesdrop. You could just hear dribs and drabs of the personal questions they were asking these guys.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, how's your 40 time, by the way? Is it getting better or is it getting worse?
Mine?
Yeah.
It was never there.
It's a great time. This is an interesting time too as well, because, I mean, it's one thing for the scouts to come back to the Browns and report on, okay, I saw, you know, Joe Smith in the Michigan State-Purdue game, and he looked pretty good. And then, you know, they don't get a chance to necessarily speak to them after the game. But now, you're right, you know, they get a chance to look them in the eye, ask them some tough questions, and then kind of get a sense of what these guys are like, you know, as people.
And it was, I mean, I laugh a little bit at when I hear these are non-team people, but when they're talking about the drills and they see things in the practices that week that tell them unequivocally, this guy doesn't have it, or this guy's really good. And I'm saying, what are you seeing? Because it's a drill, non-contact. They're in football pads, and yes, it's an NFL coaching staff leading them through. Yeah. Minnesota did the North team there, and the Redskins handled the South team for the Senior Bowl. But I'm sorry, I saw things that, you could see waist bending versus knee bending on alignment. But that I wouldn't have necessarily wiped a guy out for that or put him in and say, that's a guy the Browns should get.
I think we've all learned our lessons over there, that we make way too much of this. I know in the run-up to the Super Bowl last week, they showed the footage of Tom Brady at the combine, where he could not have looked worse. I mean, he didn't look like he even, you know, belonged
scrawny,
there.
Gangly.
Scrawny, ran poorly, didn't throw the ball well. I mean, they basically, obviously, it's why he became a six-round draft pick. So,
I
think, you know, we, you know, leave it to the experts. Let them figure out whether exactly they're seeing is.
I mean, it makes great. It does make great discussion fodder. That is
that's
exactly
here,
what it
right?
is. But that's right, and that's really, you know, its value, as you say, until the experts or the scouts go about it. And even at that, there are misses.
Absolutely.
Know that. But here's the thing: this Browns group, this Tom Heckert and his crew. You don't have to tell them how critical this is. They know it. They've said it. Everyone knows how vital a draft this really is to and a free agency period coming up on March 13th to this organization's, to this particular administration's progress line. I mean, there are no really chances for missing here. It's got to be a hit all the way around.
I don't think we can understate this, Vic. I mean, this is the biggest offseason since the Browns have been back in 99, I think, unquestionably. I mean, they have got to hit not necessarily home runs on every at-bat here, but they certainly have to have extra base hits.
Get people on
base. And keep things going in the right direction. I think, you know, we have talked about this at length as well on how well they've done in these past two drafts. They've made, you know, significant progress defensively.
Right.
Obviously now I think the focus changes to the offensive side of the ball. Clearly, whatever happens in free agency then is going to dictate what they want to do on draft day. So I think that's the, you know, that's the next big moment here. I think once we get past the combine, Vic, is that we get to March 13th and the onset of free agency, although free agency really is already underway, although not officially. You know, the Browns are trying to, you know, figure out exactly what they want to do and how much money they want to allocate at what position. So it's going to be interesting. I mean, obviously, a lot of fans are still talking about the potential for the Browns to make a strong run at Matt Flynn up in Green Bay. And I can see that happening. I don't know anything in terms of what the Browns' plans are, but, you know, that's something certainly they're going to kick the tires on.
Yeah, he would be an interesting guy, and you would think he's got to be out there because the ability to afford keeping a guy like that whose stock is got to, you would think, is going to rise dramatically because of that 6-touchdown pass performance that he had in his season finale, which of course makes him it's such an interesting and risky guy because are you basing it on that? And you're not. When organizations look at him, whether it's the Browns or any team, if he's in fact when he's officially a free agent, you're going to judge him on the body of work.
No question.
And it's a limited body to look at.
Yeah, but I think from the Browns' standpoint, should they go that route in free agency and grab that quarterback, obviously you maintain and you hold on to those draft picks, which they have three of the top 37, so obviously you can get him then some weapons if that is, in fact, the course that they want to go. You know, the other side of this, too, is, you know, do they still think that Colt McCoy can be the guy?
Right.
I mean, you know, there's still – we don't have a clear sense yet of whether or not that ship has sailed, of whether or not McCoy can still be the quarterback for this team.
I guess the thing that sticks with me is, do they have to make a full-out commitment to McCoy and not go the route of saying whoever we're picking up at quarterback, and Mike Holmgren's pretty clear on the record saying they're going to get
gonna
a quarterback. We don't know
sure
at what level or where, draft, free agency, both, whatever.
Yep.
But the point I'm making here is, can you do both? Can you say, look, we keep him around, we keep McCoy around, and maybe he could be a bridge, or he could be end up being a backup, but he's here, we got him.
We know what we got,
and we know what we got. And then the next guy, if that guy's a rookie, you don't want to push him out there, maybe necessarily, whoever. And of course, the higher the stature of that rookie, and if you're taking him in the first four picks, and you know the names that are up in that stratosphere, you know, and we know them, Andrew Luck, who's presumably number one, and Robert Griffin, who's presumably number two, or, you know, 1A and somewhere in that cluster. Does that change everything? Does that mean, of course, you're married to that guy right from day one as a starter? And I don't know if that's necessarily true. And by the same token, the only thing that might change that, as you say, is the only real accomplished name in free agency, if that's the word we can use, Matt Flynn. Does that now change everything with McCoy? Can you keep him around? I just think you might be able to do both, though.
I would agree with you. And Vic, you just presented about four different scenarios, right. And we haven't even touched upon all of
10
them.
10 others. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of things that can happen between now and then. And Flynn might not be the only name. And there's other guys out there that they could trade for as well. So I think, you know, it's limitless right now, and that's why Tom Hecker gets paid the big bucks, right?
Yeah, because I would not want to try to sort this out. I get a headache when I start thinking about it.
You.
But it's still fun to speculate, and this is the – you know, this is the topic A,
yeah.
and there really is no topic B.
And you're right. And the quarterback, I mean, I think as we looked at these playoff teams, I mean,
you know,
one of the common denominators was strong quarterback play.
Right.
Let's be honest. I mean, you've got to have that guy back there. And we've heard Mike Holmgren say it many times that until you have that guy, you have nothing. So, you know, clearly they know what they have to do.
And you said that, too, the postseason. Okay, so the common denominator in the football in the Super Bowl, common denominator in football success, NFL success, Super Bowl teams, Tom Brady, Eli Manning, Super Bowl MVP, Eli Manning, incredible throw that he makes to win the game. Brady, for his part, leading his team out of the hole, only a great quarterback is capable of doing that. And we saw the other teams that fell by the wayside, but you know, for the most part, everybody had at least solid at that position.
No question. You got to have a good quarterback, and then on the other side of the ball, you got to have some guys that can go after the quarterback. I think that was also a common denominator tier two.
Yeah,
teams that could put pressure on the quarterback and force that guy, make that guy show you how good he is. You know, make him evade pressure, make him step in the pocket, make him. You know, the big play to Manningham, that he was not the number one target there.
Right.
I mean. You know, Manning was looking down the right side before he checked down and then threw the ball down the left sideline.
And you bring up putting pressure and forcing that quarterback to do something he doesn't want to do, or in the case of Tom Brady, forcing him into the safety where pressure was a big part of that. That guy, if that guy's available to you
right.
in the upper tier of the draft, is he the better choice than the offensive player? And a lot of fans, I know, they'll hear that. They don't want to hear it. They groan. They get crazy. They say, no. But the truth is, if you put a bookend with Jabal Sheard and you have that, that can make a big difference in the outcome of as many close games as this team was in, Tom. I dare say that's more wins for you.
I would sign up for that right now, particularly if you address things in free agency, or if you come to the realization that Colt McCoy is your guy, then I would be okay with the Browns taking a strong defensive player, because you know, as high scoring as this league is now, you better have a team that can stop somebody when they need to stop them.
Great stuff. We could certainly spend more time pouring through this, and we will.
We will have more time.
You're going to come
back on more frequent
visits here on Cleveland Browns Daily. He is Tom Withers from the Associated Press. We've got much more coming up for you on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.